Hello and welcome everybody to Around the Battleground. My name is LHS and I'm your host. Joining me, as always, is J-Mac. How you doing, bud?
Good. How are you doing today, Zach?
I'm doing all right. That intro was a little bit awkward because I was alt-tabbed into a game
wow.
of FIFA.
Wow, okay.
I'm not going to lie.
Here,
so
I've got,
I'm
like,
sorry,
four tabs
buddy.
Open, one of those in one of the little side corner tabs. Like, all right, when are we going? I'm like,
Hey, I caught it. I saw it. It was only a little tiny fraction of dead air, so we're good. All right. So last week we talked about the SPL and the newly announced rosters. This week I wish we could talk about SML, but those rosters haven't been announced yet. We've got some rumblings, but nothing that we can really talk about. I think there's like one or two, maybe a roster here or there that have been announced, but I'm not entirely sure. I have like been holding off really following that, you know, apart from trying to get on a team a little bit ago, but you know, that ship has sailed. So we're still waiting on Smite Minor League to talk about, but we do have some other stuff to talk about. So this episode is really just going to be dedicated to all of the Season 6 changes. We have the Season 6.1 patch notes already up. So I felt like this would be a good chance to talk overview about all the changes coming in for the Smite Esports this year. You know, the new format for the SPL, the SML, and Combine that was just announced. On top of that, we'll throw in some like Smite Console League. And then we'll go into the actual changes for 6.1 and how that's going to impact Conquest and, you know, competitive Smite moving forward. And then at the end, if we have time, we'll talk about Merlin, and that should be fun, and maybe some just PTS stuff. But before we get into all that, what's new with you, J-Mac? Let's warm up to each other. Let's warm up to the audience here.
Not a whole lot, really. Just been working on a lot of little miscellaneous projects. I just put up on Twitter that I'm starting my audiobook project, so that's going to be one of my long-running ones that I'm going to be having going for about probably a couple months.
Very cool. Recently, you also did the... Were you? I don't know if you did. Did you participate with the APAM Pro-Am?
I did some solo casting for that on the Smite Mixer channel on Smite Game. I know that.
Yeah, how did that go?
It was fun. I only got to do the first two rounds just because I had my niece's birthday party to go to out of town. So I was only able to stay for the first two. And then I know that Alpha Jackal and Hazer were doing their own little duo cast on one or both of their channels, and they did the whole thing through. So I know that they had. And I talked to Alpha, and he said they had a blast doing it. So. The whole thing was a lot of fun, and I really hope that we can do something like that again.
We might be able to accomplish that. Nothing solid yet, but Around the Battleground might be getting in the business of some Smite event organization or something like that with UGC. But that's still some you know, behind the scenes stuff. So if you're watching this live, that's a little secret for you. We'll put the editor to work and make him cut that out for the post-production show. All right, but let's I don't know. And then for me, nothing really. Just started a new job. That's why I'm all fancy looking. Finally no longer unemployed. That's a good thing. That's gonna let me spend a lot more time on hobby and stuff, really dedicate myself into Smite coaching. Got picked up a combine team. I haven't actually discussed with the guys if I could talk about that publicly. I'll have to talk to them and see if they want me to put our team out there. But yeah, so I will be in the combine. So that's as good a segue as any to talk about Season 6 Esports. Let's start with the bottom rung. Let's start with Combine. We just got the details for Combine. And it's pretty interesting. I think this could possibly be the best year for Combine that we've had in a long time, maybe ever. The biggest thing going into this year, the biggest detriment that Combine has really seen is, you know, SML used to be relegation based, promotion based, and then now that it's kind of franchised, how do you get into the SML? You got to make it there, right? Well, they've actually added a route for, you know, combine teams to make it in the SML. Jamek, why don't you talk to us a little bit about that?
So I just recently got a chance to look over that. I know they got announced a little bit earlier, I think this week or last week that got announced. I haven't had a ton of time to look over, but from what it looks like, is it's a mid-season one this time around. So as these teams play throughout, it's like eight series of open bracket tournaments that take place. So anybody can jump in there. It's not like, you know, you have to, it's not going to be, you know, if you played last week, you can't play this week kind of thing. It's if you want to play, cool. If your team sucked this one bracket tournament, then throw them in a new bracket tournament. Try again with the new group of people. I mean, that's what it's looking like on here. But with it at the middle of the season, the bottom SML teams have a chance to, or I think it's the bottom SML team, single bottom SML team, has a chance to be relegated out by some of the top performing combine teams, if I'm not mistaken, onto that one. And then they have also something I don't think the combine has done before, is add a actual significant little prize pool for each one. Each bracket tournament is $1,250 prize pool for it, which I don't think combine has ever even had a prize pool like that. I think it's always either been gems or very, very, very low prize pool onto that, like some like maybe $50 a person for first place kind of thing. So significant increase in the prize pool, and now having the chance to relegate into the SML halfway through the season, which I still don't recall if there's any way to get into the SPL at the moment. It's kind of weird how getting into SPL from SML level works and things like that because of the whole having to move thing, which we'll probably talk about in a little bit going back over SPL.
Yeah, so I think it's really cool that we're adding, my voice is just, that's like the third time it's cracked. Like, oh, I'm a little on high. Good Lord, I'm a child here. But I think it's really cool that we're offering, you know, combine teams a way into the SML by way of underperforming SML teams. I think that, you know, we have some new orgs coming into the SML, or, you know, new teams and things like that. I think this will definitely be more of a thing for EU combine and SML more than likely, because I think the orgs with EU are a lot newer and maybe don't put together the best team. But then as far as like NA SML goes, I think all of the teams are going to be pretty stacked and pretty good. And I don't know that I actually expect any of these SML teams to not win two games. It'll be interesting if they don't. I don't know. Do you think that's something we'll actually see? I don't know that, if you've been hearing anything behind the scenes about these SML teams. But, you know, based on the strength of NA SML from last year, this last split even, do you think we could expect any team to not win two games?
I don't know. I think that the bottom teams that we had from SML last time are the obvious ones we can filter out of potential for a top seed. I think that, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I am wrong, it's 4-4 NAEU orgs for SML, but there's no region lock onto it. It's just 8 orgs that are coming in for the SML. And when we look at the top 4 from last time around, I think only one of those teams in that group may have only had 2 wins throughout that entire time, but that was also in a 3 split course as opposed to an entire half season. So I don't think any of them within a half season's time span had less than 2 games won. And since we're cutting out the bottom team entirely, which is usually the one that had 1 or 0 wins, I really don't see a possibility of those teams dropping out, but there is always a chance.
Yeah, we always say this. We always say that, you know, by shrinking the team pool, it'll improve competition, right? Yet every year that we do that, we have look at the SPL. You know, we went down we went down 2 teams in the SPL this year. SK didn't win a single game. That still happens when you condense talent, right? And so I don't know, maybe it'll be the same for this SML change. It'll be hard to see. Maybe the condensed of talent at the top for SML will mean that the bottom teams can't get those wins anymore. And then you got to ask, what happens then next once you have combine level teams going in there? Are they going to be able to do anything better than these SML teams? And, you know, it'll be really interesting to follow. That'll be a storyline we'll be following both for the combine and for SML, you know, as these teams get closer and closer to that halfway point, you know, if they don't have a win or they have that one win, you know, it'll be really interesting to see what happens. But, you know, all these other SML teams are going to be wanting to, you know, not lose to the team that could be relegated, right? It'll, you know, that'll be the extra fire to put them in the ground. But Combine this year looks like it could be really stacked. I mean, you have so much talent that, especially for NA, I feel like NA SML and Combine has been stacked for a long time. And then now that, you know, we're condensing teams out of NA and we're pushing a lot more of those people towards Combine, that's going to make it even more competitive. But on the other hand, you have EU SML. EU has always, I felt like, been a little bit weaker at the amateur level. It's been, you know, at the higher end, it's really good. But at the lower end, I feel like NA kind of has the better spread of talent. So do you think, which region do you think has the better chance of like having an SML team get relegated? Do you think it'll be NA or do you think it'll be EU?
I don't know, because since everybody can, you know, mix and match their rosters, there's no region lock with it. It's kind of hard to tell. I imagine we will still have some, and honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if we still saw a lot of just NA or just EU teams coming through, because yeah, region lock is out all around, but do you really want to play on 150, 200 ping when you could be playing on 60 ping or something like that? NA always does seem to have the more dominant set, and they really do have a ton of stacked players. I mean, from casting amateur level Smite for 3 years, I could sit here and just start going off a list of top NA players that I'm surprised are either not on at least a bottom SPL team, a top SML team, and if they make it into the Combine, there's a good chance they could make it into the SML with that. EU, I'm not as familiar with, obviously, because I don't deal with it as much, but from whenever I did Challenger Circuit casting, and even just watching some of the old SML, EU always had a strong top side, but a very weak bottom side compared to NA, kind of always had this top, okay, middle, and then they had their bottom. So I think that NA overall is going to have better chances of getting a team in there, but you never know coming through with this.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I think this will be one of the biggest, best competitive years for Smite. I mean, with everything changing, the SPL and the SML and now Combine, you know, you can make money at every level, and I think that's hugely important, and that's going to stimulate a lot of players and a lot of growth at that amateur level. So I'm really excited to watch that moving forward. Next up, we're going to talk about is the Smite Console League. So after last year, the Console League kind of got dissolved into the Console Series, which was all open bracket everything, and it was not very well received by console players and that scene, just like the Global Series. So this year, they're bringing back the Console League, and we're having an open qualifying tournament to make it into that league. It'll be really interesting. I think we have a few players going back to console from PC. You know, I don't expect Inbound. I don't expect Bobby to go down to the SML. I think he's probably going to go try and win another world championship on the box. You know, we've still got Jumpa. We still got all of those guys. It'll be really interesting to see kind of what happens with those teams and who forms who. You know, I wonder if we'll see a super team kind of evolve, or if, you know, we'll see some of the older teams kind of stick together. But Smite Console League coming back, how do you feel about that? As a, you know, you're a predominantly PC player. Are you lukewarm about this? Are you excited? What are your thoughts?
No, I mean, I always love seeing the Smite. And in all honesty, as much heck as people really do give the console scene, it does not deserve as much flack as it's given, because they're some of the most exciting games to watch, not just because of how intense the games are, but because of how intense the players are. If you've never sat in on an actual, you know, back when they had, whenever they were doing it in their studio, when they were doing like the console finals and things like that, they had their whole studio set up so all the teams could be sitting around on the couches and the chairs all over. Yeah, the two teams playing, the casters right behind y'all yelling. It got loud in there. It got louder than I've ever heard even some of the world championship games get. and there's only like 60, 70 people in that room. They are some of the most intense, hyped up matches of all time. And still, to this day, one of my favorite games is a console game that happened. It was Kaz Esports versus Soar Gaming. One of my top five favorite games played of all time. I'm more than excited to see more console league coming through. Even the console league that happened, you know, the console wars that we had at Worlds was really fun. It still ended up being, you know, I think it was still some of the old box players who ended up coming out on top on that one, if I'm mistaken. But now this gives them kind of a chance that they didn't really have and kind of got shafted on last year, was this chance to be in the pro league and have an actual qualifying spot for it. It does say, see if I can pull that back up here. It says top two teams from each group will qualify into the console league from their console and region. So it is still separate for them compared to the rest of us where it's going to be mixed together. So there's going to be 16 teams total, four teams for Xbox NA, four for EU, four for PlayStation NA, and four for PlayStation EU. So there's going to be a pretty stark competition going on through there. And I imagine that all of those four will stay as kind of four separate leagues, but it will have their moments where they do get to clash back with each other later on until it would, I imagine, have to be a LAN of some sort, like a mid-season LAN for obviously Xbox and PlayStation, because they can't crossplay yet and they won't be crossplaying for a little while. But if that happens beforehand, we might see it later, might see it earlier on.
So up to this point, I think a lot of people would say like the Xbox is the better place for competitive players. They have more talent there. You know, I've always said that, you know, PS4 could be there. They just, you know, need the chance. Do you think that with crossplay being added to Xbox, so these Xbox console players will now be able to play against, you know, PC players in ranked, is that going to be an unfair advantage for them moving forward in this league?
I don't think so necessarily. They're going to play definitely against a competition that they're not used to. If they are pure box players coming over to PC or playing against these PC players, or if they were former PC, then they know what they're going up against. So I don't think it's quite as unfair for PlayStation versus console, because the metas are going to be very similar. They're going to be playing the same stuff on their console specific ones versus what they do on the PC ones. And even so, console and PC metas have slowly begun meshing together. It's taken a couple of years for it to get as close as it is. But I don't think that's going to affect it too much. I mean, at the casual level, yeah, it might help them out more. But when it comes down to the actual competitive nature, PlayStation's going to do its own thing. Xbox is going to do its own thing. And then you get to see them all kind of butt heads together near the end.
Now, when do we get our Switch Pro League? A true SPL?
Probably at no sooner than a year from now, I would imagine. I imagine they want to at least get it. I think it'll take at least a year before Switch comes to a league.
Do you think we will see by Worlds? So they've done a few things where at Worlds they'll do like a Switch Invitational where you could come in and like sign up as like team or something
like
that.
Kind of like what they did with the console one last time.
Right. And then they did like a Hot Gods tournament at the year before last.
Right. I can see there maybe being a small Invitational, but nothing like massive. And they would definitely need to put some kind of, I'd imagine, console restriction on there, or platform restriction, because what will end up happening if they do that is all of the teams that didn't qualify for console Worlds, hey, there's a Switch Invitational, let's hop on board and just, you know, play against all these people who are new to Switch Smite or not as experienced on Smite on console in general. So I think if they put a platform lock, and especially if they put a league locked where if you played in this league, you can't take part in this Invitational, I'd be up for it. But I imagine before an actual league hits, it'd be at least a year.
Okay. So do you think we will get a Switch league though?
I think that if the Switch helps to really build up a big player base, and I've seen a lot of people already playing on it, kind of like how when, you know, it's Xbox and then PS4, well, the Xbox people started kind of going to the PS4 and now we're going to get Switch, so we might see some more of the trickle-down effect with that. I think there's potential for the league. I'm not going to say, yes, there will be a league. I'm saying if it's going to happen, it wouldn't be at least until next year. it really just depends on what the player base growth is with the Switch and if they mm-hmm. see enough potential competition for it.
Do you think we will see any official support from like Nintendo? We are the only MOBA, as far as I know, on Switch. We're the if we're not the only MOBA, we're the biggest competitive MOBA. You know,
but, yeah.
Do they try to add that to their, you know, they it looks like with Smash and everything like that, they might be making a play to, you know, start encouraging esports and support esports. You've got, you know, Splatoon, you've got Smash, now you've got Smite. What is Nintendo with these S competitive games? See, this fits a theme, it's a pattern.
It's just it's just a good letter. It's a good letter. You flip it on it, you flip it upside down, it's the same letter. I mean, that's just it's just so good about it. It's just a good letter. So
do you think we see any official support?
I think there's potential. I think that there's got to be some kind of event that happens beforehand, like an invitational or a small league before Nintendo dips their hand into the pocket on this one and starts, you know, potentially pushing some money towards it. You know, promotion is one thing. Actual support of it's going to be a whole nother process for it.
I can respect that. I think it'd be really interesting. It'll also be really interesting navigating since, you know, Skillshare has such a close tie with Mixer and Microsoft and Xbox, them getting into bed with, you know, Nintendo now with the Switch, everything like that. So I'll be interested. And then, I mean, I just really do want to see Nintendo get more involved in the esports scene of their communities and everything like that. That would be really good. Cool. And getting involved with Smite would be a good way to, like, move past, you know, their kind of walled garden and bring something else to the table.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen a couple times like Nintendo World Championship event stuff, right, where they kind of do some cool competitive stuff.
Right.
Maybe Smite gets added to like an event day or something like that. That'd be really cool. You know, like Smite's always kind of been a niche community, so that might be a good way to like increase that. But, you know, that's all speculation. All right, so that's, you know, Combine, a little bit about the console league. And then SML is going down to, you know, four teams in AEU. We, like J-Mac already talked about, you know, bigger prize pool there. And now we are adding some potential relegation for those teams. Then going on to SPL, you know, if you haven't already been following that, do we need to talk about SPL? I feel like we kind of did cover that again last week.
We did. Yeah, I think just a real quick recap onto it. So basically with SPL, if you haven't been keeping up with Smite for the last almost 3 months now, SPL is now down to 10 teams. There's no region lock. All games are played on LAN in Atlanta, where all of the pros are moving to, or I think there's also accommodations if you have to fly players who can't move but do still want to take part. But I think just about everybody is moving at this point for it. So that means that former EU player or EU players can now play with the NA boys on the same team together. I mean, I know, for example, Captain Twig and Final K are playing on a team together. So there's a lot going on with that one. There's going to be no longer the three split process that we've seen, where basically none of the splits actually matter until the world split, which is fall. You know, yay, I get to go to DreamHack this or that, or I get to play in, you know, this or that invitational, but it's not Worlds, so what does it really matter comparatively? You know, you get a cool little title for it, but now it's all going to be everything that you play all season long is going to build up to the potential for Worlds. So if you missed any of the rosters, I mean, you can see all the rosters, you know, popping down below us right now. You can see what rosters have stuck together, which ones have mixed together. And then I believe play for that is sometime mid-February or March. I don't think they've officially announced it, but I imagine it won't be till at least mid-February once Season 6 has launched and gotten a few weeks under its belt.
They did announce that they were canceling the preseason, which was going to be a bunch of exhibition matches going on during February, I believe. So I think we are most likely looking at March as our launch date for Smite Competitive. But again, things subject to change. There's a lot of stuff going on with the United States government shutdown, getting players' visas, getting players settled in, moved in. It's taking a lot more time than was originally planned. So who knows what'll happen there. It sure would be a shame for any of these teams to not be able to get some of these players due to EU stuff. and, you know, either have to start the year off with a different roster than they wanted or have to like change their roster. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But yeah, that's basically what the SPL and what all the other little the leagues below it are doing. So I think we're good to talk about all those changes. I think now we can move on to the meat potatoes, which is season six changes for competitive as far as the conquest map and game balance goes. And it's a lot. There's going to be a lot to talk about here. So we wanted to get through kind of all of the overview stuff leading into this. And now we're kind of going to talk about some of the bigger things that are happening for season six. Obviously, we're not going to be talking about everything. You know, the battle pass doesn't concern us. Crossplay doesn't really. Role queue, then rank changes, all that kind of stuff really doesn't. But first thing that does interest us is going to be the new formula for kill bounty, which is going to equalize the playing field a little bit more as the gap between players kind of goes on. We've seen some moves similar to this in the past where, you know, we're trying to target that late game, mid to late game, and make counterplay a viable option. What'll happen now is I'll just read the old formula here for killing players of a higher level. It was 50 plus 30 times the victim level times 1 plus 0.1 victim level minus killer level. And so now they're changing that 0.1 to 0.25. So adding a not insignificant amount of XP to that. And then as far as the gold stuff goes, 0.1 is going to a 0.15 and a 0.1 going to a 0.2. You should be getting a lot more gold than you do XP. So you're able to buy items back into the fight rather than just getting on like your base stats leveled up.
Right.
So I'm not entirely sure what this is going to do. I'm very interested to see. I haven't been able to play on PTS, so I haven't been able to play with the new changes. I haven't seen any groveling about it on Twitter. So I'm assuming that this is largely a non-factor, maybe quality of life. But I don't think this is really going to do anything. This is not a huge change for me. There is something to be said for adding the counterplay, but sometimes you can go too far, right? Adding too much counterplay kind of negates having a lead. We've seen that in the last couple years with duo lane. You can get, you know, 5-0 in 2 minutes in duo lane, and that lead means nothing. You have no lead. And so where the counterplay is kind of too strong there, I don't think this is really on that level.
No, I don't think so. Basically, all this is doing is for the people who are behind and get a big kill or get a big shutdown, it's going to mean a little bit more instead of, you know, this kind of weirdly insignificant amount of gold or experience. They're going to get a pretty hefty amount comparatively now. Like we mentioned, it's on experience, it's 0.1 to 0.25 on the multiplier for, you know, the level differentials there. But what it also means, and what they did mention, is on the back end of it, so say you're 4 or 5 levels up on the person that you kill, that's not changing. So you're whenever you're killing somebody lower level than you, it's not, that formula is not changing. It's only the people who are behind you in level getting those kills. So this is going to help the people who are behind stay not as far behind and help them get those items and get those levels on just a little bit quicker off of them.
Yeah. So nothing huge game breaking there. However, the next item is going to be a little bit interesting, and we might, you know, it's a little bit polarizing, I think. So the last year of Smite has largely seen solo lane not matter at all. We used to have solo side objectives that caused huge snowball in the solo lane. They took that away, and that kind of neutered your solo lane. You're not able to snowball out of that lane as hard anymore. You just kind of sit in lane, soak up a bunch of XP, and then rotate to team fights and make your presence known. But you couldn't do that quickly. And so they're trying to make solo a little more contesting, a little bit more man lane back. You know, you want to be able to fight. You want to feel like you're doing something. And so they're adding the Totem of Ku, which is going to be a totem in the middle of the lane towards Fire Giant that gives a buff of 5% movement speed, 25 MP5, and plus 25 gold to each team member when it's taken, and the buff lasts for 10 seconds, and it is around your tower area. And it spawns at 1 minute, respawns 1 minute after it is successfully taken, and despawns at 15. So at most, you can have, there are 10 opportunities, well, you know, 15 opportunities, right?
I think it's 14 is the most, because it starts at 1,
yeah,
ends at 15, and you have to also, right, even account if you're frame perfect, your best shot is like 14. I think that Pawn said realistically, you're only going to get it 10 to 12 times in the game.
Mm-hmm. So if you're able to get it, right, if you're able to get it perfectly 14 times, times 25, that's only 350 gold. Very inconsequential. That's not even that's not even your ward chalice, right?
Well, that's 25 per player. So it's 300 some odd per person. It's 25 gold to each member of the team when it's taken. So overall, it's like 1,500 gold. It's nothing big. It's just all this totem really, to me, what this totem does is it gives the solo laner something to do other than sit on solo island for 25 minutes while the rest of their team goes on and have the time of their life. This gives junglers a reason to come back to that side of the map after 10 minutes in the game, or even after 5 minutes, or the first, I would say really after the first two blue buffs, junglers really never need to go to the solo lane side because they're already getting their defense items online, so they're not going to die. They're more focused on getting kills in either the dual lane to shut them down or the mid lane to try and shut the more important mid lane down. So this is going to give them some kind of incentive. And also another thing with it is the MP5 and the movement speed. For a jungler, getting 5% movement speed is pretty big, especially if you can keep that on a constant rotation, cutting through the jungle and then taking that quick sidestep into your tower for the extra movement speed. That way you can get to your jungle camps faster. You can make faster rotations with that. I think the gold is less significant compared to the MP5 or the movement speed over anything else. So I think those first 15 minutes where the movement speed is on the lower end, you're not going to, you know, all you're going to have are your boots and maybe 1.5 or 2 items beyond that. So it's really just going to kind of help the movement and the flow of the game a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, but I don't know. I kind of want more, right? I want it to do more. I kind of called what it was going to be. I was calling that it was going to be like a global buff, right? You have to give something that gives something to all your teammates for it to really be worthwhile. And we kind of got that. It's not enough. This buff is inconsequential. If you lose it every time, it's 350 gold total. If you lose it every single possible time, who cares? That 5% movement speed, at the end of the day, I don't think that actually matters because it only lasts for 10 seconds. What are you going to do with 5% movement speed for 10 seconds? The biggest thing that I could see it being problematic is probably that 25 MP5. It's not insignificant. The MP5 is what I look at as well because it's going to let you cast a lot of abilities. So you have characters like Wukong, we'll say, you know,
okay,
very mana hungry, you know, your assassins, things like that. That's what this change is ultimately going to do. It's going to make snowballing kind of crazy. It's going to change the meta out of your soul lane a lot more, where you can spam a lot more abilities. Mm-hmm. You got the blue buff, you've got this MP5 buff now,
right?
Your lane opposition is not going to be able to keep up with the amount of abilities you can just throw at them.
So let's look at it like this with the MP5. So 25 MP5, what does MP5 even mean for players who are a little bit unfamiliar? That's mana per 5 seconds. So every 5 seconds, you're going to get 25 mana. So to multiply that to 10 seconds, you're going to get 50 mana over that time. That doesn't sound like a lot, but all you got to do is walk back in your tower, walk back out, refresh the cooldown on it. Now there's another 50. So if you can do that perfectly, let's say you mess up a little bit onto it, you're going to get about 250 mana back for free every time that tower is taken down. You're going to have 250 mana for that extra minute that your opponent's not going to have. Because All they've got is their blue buff and maybe their breastplate of valor. So now you're sitting 250 mana higher than them, so you're going to have more abilities to poke or escape if you need be. You're going to have those for if you make rotations over to the team fight. I think that's the secondary significant part is the sustain inside those lanes, because all you got to do is, man, I'm a little low on mana. Let me just walk back in my tower real quick and get a little bit of that back. Oh, hey, we have the buff again. Let me walk back in and grab that again. So I think that plus and 5% movement speed doesn't sound significant at all. It sounds very minuscule considering boots give you 18%. Almost all of the katanas and all of the ancient blade tree gives you 10% a piece. So 5% doesn't sound that big until it's 5% more than your opponent has at all times. Mm-hmm. You walk over, you want to make a rotation over to dual lane from mid. What do? You walk into the tower, you get 10 seconds of 5% more movement speed than your jungler. Now, if you're the fastest guy in the game, it's a little bit of extra power for him. It's not huge, obviously. 5% is not massive for Mercury, but for every time you walk in that tower, that's 10 more seconds that you're moving faster than your opponent at any given time. So it's really going to make rotations a little bit more, okay, guys, he just left my lane. You have about 12 seconds till he's there normally. Well, now he's got that 5%. You're kind of down there. All of a sudden, that 12 might turn into 10 and a half seconds because you weren't expecting it. Or he was able to quickly get around your opponent before they noticed because of that extra movement speed disparity. It's just little things onto that. Nothing's massive, nothing super significant, but just those little things all throughout the game, being able to get to your buffs just a little quicker might help you be able to do an invasion a little bit quicker. I think that's where kind of the top level of play is going to see that 5% utilized.
Potentially. I think that this is going to need buffs. I think it's going to be needed. I think they should have started it more aggressively and worked its way back. I mean, that's kind of been the tried and true Hyra's philosophy, right? Start something being too strong and then work it back. Whereas it's harder to make some, well, I guess it's not. I guess that's also something they do as well, where they make it weak and then see what they need to do to make it stronger. I don't know. It's more fun for PTS when they make it overpowered, though, you know? But, you know,
isn't it always?
It'll be interesting. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they actually do here. I think, like I said, this is definitely going to need buffs, but it's a very interesting concept, and I really like it. I really like the idea of, like, global buffs for your team, making it contestable from both sides, so you both can be whacking at it and everything like that. Mm-hmm. It's very cool. I like this addition. I just want it to be more. I'm whelmed at this point. I'm, you know, a little bit whelmed more towards the underside.
On a slightly related yet unrelated note, did you see the clip from Finocase stream where this is going to be patched? They're going to fix it. AJ said that's going to be fixed. But at that time, you could move the tower away. You could move the totem from its spawn. They put it in the spawn point of the fountain. They had all players in the game. They obviously made a custom for this. It was 4v4, and they picked all gods who have walls that can displace. So they had, like, Thors, you know, Ymir's things, all those kind of things, Terrors as well. And they took it all the way from solo lane and put it in the fountain within, like, 15 minutes or something like that. A lot of time and dedication, but they did it, and I was proud of it. I thought it was amazing.
That's intense. So, yeah. That's what we got PTS for, those little chains. That would actually be kind of cool, though, if you could, like, hide it. Like, you take it, and now you can hide it, so the enemy jungler has to try to find it. Pit.
Put it in the FG pit. That'd be even funnier. You want to go and take it, now you got the FG to fight, too.
I kind of like that idea, where, like, if you are winning, if you make it like an AMC Hive or, like, his Stinger, right? So you have the buff, and then whoever takes it, right, gets the buff on them, and then after the, like, the spawning point, it just drops off of you wherever you are. So you could obviously, like, abuse that, and then so you'd have to add in logic, right, where, like, if you're in your fountain or something like that, it would default back to where it was supposed to, so you couldn't cheese it that much unless you wanted to go back to default. But that could be really interesting. That'd be really inopportune. Like, you could use that if, like, oh, we've got a team fight. We're going to have the totem come off of me in the middle of this team fight. It's going to block an ability. You know, some next gen, like, 40 chess type stuff. Another change we're going to see is minion spawn time. They spawn at 1 minute now from 1:30, and you get a movement speed buff going out of fountain to get into your lane a little bit faster.
Right.
That's kind of a non-factor. Just makes the game start a little bit quicker. Yeah. Unless we find a way to really break that movement speed.
Yeah, those extra 30 seconds, you're really not needed. The only people I ever really see that affect are like the streamers who are like talking to their chat or checking Twitter or something in the middle, and then they're like, oh yeah, hey, the game's here or whatever, no big deal. But even still, you get that movement speed leaving the fountain anyways, or leaving the base, so it's really not all that big a deal.
Actually, do think that this is going to be a bigger deal in competitive play, because that movement speed is going to allow deep warding to be a lot easier.
Yeah, it's possible. We could see some real like deep speed buff wards or red buff wards or things like that very early on. And that's another thing we always have to think is at the very top level of play, a lot of these changes will be more significant than the average player base there. Mm-hmm. I think in general, it's just, especially for people who do tournaments and spectating a lot, guys like me, Jiffins and all that, it sucks sitting here for a minute while we wait for this game to finally get, because we have to wait for the players to load in. And after they load in, then we have to wait for the game to start counting down. And then we have to wait for the game to start counting up. And we always have to find like our happy medium of, okay, well, where do we pause it so that way we can do a 3-2-1 go and then start casting. For some reason, we had it starting in a minute. And I'm like, why are we starting in a minute? That's a minute of dead air that we have to kill for no reason. Let's start at like 20 seconds or something. So we're just getting right into the action unless we see something happening. So for spectators and people who do tournament stuff, it's going to help because it'll very minorly help kind of cut down on that wasted time in the beginning.
Yeah. Not a big change at the smaller end, not the smaller end, but the less competitive end, and the higher end, definitely going to be something to watch. It's definitely going to change the dynamic of those early games. Maybe this results in more ganks, more, you know, 5-man invades to kind of stress, stuff like that. We can see some really some more manipulation of the map, I think, is going to be really interesting to follow on that. Minion balance. Brute minions are now more reliably spawned. So, you know, beforehand, trying to like figure out how you're going to get a brute wave was tricky at best. Now brutes spawn every third wave, but one brute at a time from 0 to 10. So after 10 minutes, one brute, 20 minutes, two brutes, 30 minutes, three brutes.
Those are on every wave now. That's the big change. It was previously every third wave after their allotted times. Now it's every single wave is going to have 1, 2, or 3, depending on if it's pre-10, after 10, after 20, or after 30 is where they've made that thing. So pre-10, it's still every third wave. That's unchanged. But after 10 minutes, it's one brute every time, 20 minutes, two, 30 minutes, three brutes. And one of the reasons they did that is because of the big topic we're going to go into next.
The new Gold Furies. Very cool. We've been wanting to see more of this kind of stuff come in to Smite. You know, when you look at other games that have these global buffs, these environment buffs, things like that. You know, you look at League of Legends with the, you know, the Drakes and the Herald and everything like that. And then you've got Dota with its, you know, runes and things like that that you can get. There's a lot of different stuff that buffs the team and buffs the map and things like that. So adding in some of this stuff will be cool. So Gold Fury will always spawn first, your basic Gold Fury. And then after that, it can change between two different ones, the Oni Fury and the Primal Fury. The Oni Fury on the next round of minion spawn, all minions in all three lanes will gain bonus damage increased by 75%, bonus health increased by 30%, physical protection increased 50%, and magical protection increased 50%. Man, those are some beefy boys coming down your lane. You add that to your brutes, that's a wave that unchecked can just take a lane. And they're making adjustments already to make sure that can happen.
Well, right. So that's the thing is they actually changed that. It was bonus damage 150%, but I think Pond mentioned that if that happened and a lane was left unchecked, they would literally take the entire lane on their own. And so they've actually toned it down to the 75%. So that way they can still take a tower and maybe do some damage to the second one, but they're not going to wipe the entire lane if you're having a fight on the other side. So when I heard 150%, I went, that's not what you want to do. That does not sound good at all. And then it only took a couple of days in testing for them to realize, yeah, that was definitely not a good idea, and tone that down to the 75%. But early game, this isn't going to be as significant. Late game for sieges, when you have three brute minions who are already harder to kill because they have obviously more health, more protections than normal ones. Now you have three of them, and now there's three of them powered up. And this buff can also apply to fire giants. So imagine three fire giant brutes with this buff. It's going to be extremely difficult to kill these ones without dumping all five of your character's clearing abilities on just the minion wave alone to make sure that you kill those before they get too close to the Phoenix or tower or whatever. So late game sieges is going to be much harder for the defending team now, because they're really going to have to focus and pay attention on to what is going on with that.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this change. I think this will have to be toned down again, more than likely. There's just too much going on. I think unless they give, you know, defending sieges, it's been really hard. I mean, we've been living in a siege defense friendly game meta for a while. So making it easy to crack the base doesn't make sense going backwards anymore. And this really does make cracking the base a lot easier. So I'm assuming that we have to see some sort of changes going to favor, you know, siege defense a little bit more. That's kind of the direction we've been moving with competitive Smite. So this obviously is going to warrant some other changes to come, I believe. The other fury that can spawn is the Primal Fury, as we already said, and that gives all gods on the killing team gain 5% increased damage to jungle camp and bosses, and that stacks up to 3 times. That is less important, I feel like. I'm kind of, again, underwhelmed by this buff. Am I in the wrong here?
No, I don't think entirely. The big thing with this one is it includes the bosses on here. So other Gold Furies, other Fire Giants, and the Pyromancer are all affected by this as well. That's probably the most important aspect of it, is if you can get three of these before the late game starts coming through and you get those enhanced Fire Giants, things like that. If you can get 10 to 15% increased damage, it's a lot more significant than you think, because you think you know your secure damage. As the enemy team, you say, okay, that's a Kukulkan with 450 magic power. He's going to want to ult when that thing's at like 1200 health, so that way by the time it hits it, it's at 800 and he's going to get the secure on it. Now that number is different because he has that 10% increased damage. Now instead of at 1200, he's casting at 1300 or 1400 because he's getting that bonus power to be able to hit a little bit harder, a little bit earlier. So it's going to make objective burning much easier for the team that has those buffs on them. But because it's only going to be spawning every, potentially at best, every other, but more than likely, I would say probably 2 out of every 5 Gold Furies that you get. And remember, there is still the respawn timer of these Gold Furies, and it's not the same one every time. The way that they change it is the first one is gold, then it's Oni or Primal, and then if it was Oni, it's Primal or Gold. If it was Primal, it's Oni or Gold, and then it keeps flopping in between that. So there's even potential that you might never see that Gold Fury pop back up again. It might just keep going, into the Oni and the gold, Oni gold, Oni gold, and then, oh hey, here's a Primal to throw in at 45 minutes in the game. Who cares about it at that point? I think pre 35, 40 minutes, maybe even closer down to 30, 35, I think this buff is more significant. Once everybody is 6-slotted, full build, and it's kind of on the back foot of a game already, maybe a little bit less important.
Yeah, I think maybe, you saying that it's on the bosses kind of makes me think about it a little bit more, and like the opportunity you have there for burning objectives. Mm-hmm. It's not reliable, and I think that, it really does need to have a little bit more oomph to it, right? It's lackluster at this point, and I want to see changes to make each Gold Fury, its own thing or make it so that, you know, both gold, like every time after you kill the Gold Fury once, every time after that it spawns the Gold Fury and then one of the other Gold Furies, either the Oni or the Prime or something like that. Make it so like you're stacking that up and make sure like the other ones don't give you gold and things like that, but it gives you these buffs, right? So it makes sure like it makes those dances a lot more interesting. But that's, you know, even
right,
that's kind of out there. Next up we've got Pyromancer changes, where you can actually tell if the Pyromancer buff is active.
Thank God.
And who gets it. So woo there. Next up is actually a really big change going forward for season 6. The Fire Giant is getting huge buffs. Fire Giant is getting his new attacks. You know, there's going to be the magma pools are coming back, so you're going to be taking a lot more damage just standing in the fire pit. And then base health increased to 7,000 health per level, from 225 to 275. Protections from 90 to 50 to 110-70. And then your enhanced Fire Giant even more from 6,000 to 8,000. You know, it's still 225 to 275, 90 and 50 to 125 and 85. Base power from 130-0 to 150-20. And the enhanced Fire Giant buff now allows players to ignore 50% of a tower's backdoor protections. So there is, makes it a lot harder, but getting that enhanced Fire Giant buff, it is really significant. Ignoring backdoor protections, 50% backdoor protections gone. That's huge. And it's, you know, Fire Giant's been kind of the objective where it's like, all right, let's go get Fire Giant. It's something to do. It's not really going to make a huge difference power wise. It's not like the game decider that it used to be. This potentially is more of a game decider at this point. You know, you can do a lot more. You have a lot more options available to you now with the, you know, backdoor protection. So I think we'll see a lot. Honestly, looking at this right now, we might be headed to another burst meta right out of the gate, you know, in season 6. And those are always the most fun and also the most awful. So we'll see, you know, where we go for season 6. But, you know, what do you think about the Fire Giant being such an absolute unit going into season 6?
It finally feels like it's an actual objective more than anything else. It's more difficult to take, which it's been feeling like the Fire Giant as of recent, because of how bursty the meta has gotten recently. It feels like the Fire Giant's just made out of paper once you get to the late game and 6 slotted, where now this thing is actually going to start swinging at you. And it's another big thing onto that one is it does have power in both aspects now. It does have magical and physical power and magical and physical protections that are pretty significant now. So I think that it's going to be hitting hard. It's going to be obviously be hitting harder than it was previously, but it's also just going to feel like a more significant fight to deal with, especially. One thing that got added on there is the attack chain and the attack rotation that's happening with these. Is currently right now it does 2 attacks and then it does the knockup, 2 attacks, it does the lava rocks, and then it does 2 more attacks and it puts the ring on fire. This is going to stay the same with this new Fire Giant, but now afterwards they've added the lava pools. They've added those magma lava pools that they had back last season. This time around now, it's going to be 1 attack, lava pool, 1 attack, knockup, 1 attack, rocks, and then it's going to keep looping that through. It means that the more significant things, the more hard-hitting things, you know, the rift, is it hits hard, and it really messes up your entire, you know, run that you have going. But then it's also the lava pools, and those things stacking up with 5 people are going to be significant later on, or 3 or 4 people, because those are pretty big-sized lava pools. I think we took an estimate that it's roughly 80% of a Khepri, something like that in size, because that's a literal unit of measurement in Smite, is 1 Khepri's width. So with this new rotation of attacks, it's going to feel more like a raid boss than anything else. And I kind of enjoy that. When we got this new rotation of it, it did feel like a new raid boss. Like, wow, this is something we have to practice and get good at. And even still, to this day, there are people who can't do the Fire Giant dance properly. Now it's going to be even harder when that when these new loops come through and we get the enhanced fire giant hitting harder, dropping magma pools, you know, every 3-4 seconds on top of people. It's going to get crazy, but it's going to make these fire giant dances super important to know when to actually jump off them over anything else, or when to full commit to it.
I'm really excited to see how this changes the game again. You know, season 5, mm-hmm. we saw a lot of changes there, like you said, you know, having to relearn fire giant dance and things like that. And so I think this will be another one of those things where it's going to take a lot of getting used to, and we might see less fire giants to start the year than when, you know, we normally would. Maybe some lost fire giants, a lot more 50-50s, something like that. It'll be really fun to watch how the game kind of evolves around it. So moving on from fire giant, we've got jungle changes. Nothing really too drastic, I feel like. Small harpies decreased base health from 150 to 130, but increased health per level from 55 to 70, and increased magical protections from 0 to 5. So just, I don't know that we really saw any problems with the magical jungles.
Alkwong never really got big. Habwa was rarely ever done. Kabrakid never really saw play. Any of the mages or the guardians that you would see in jungle never really got much play this time, aside from the few offhand players. So that's not super significant, but it does make it to where they can't be as proficient as the physical ones now.
I think starting off the year, you know, for season 5, we saw like a lot of Janus jungle. And it was insane how fast you could clear some jungle camps. And so looking at that, like, it was nothing, you know, it wasn't sustainable. You know, we didn't see it after the first, you know, after spring split and everything like that. But it was something that was definitely there for a little bit. And so I think Hyrus is like, okay, you know, we saw this, we saw problems with it, and now we kind of need to change it to make it so, you know, you want these, you know, magical jungles to be a little challenged, a little bit more challenged when they kind of go in these roles. But again, nothing really that big for these guys. Large harpies, you know, again, increased health per level, increased base magic. Buff holders, decreased base health, increased health per level. You know, so across the board, we're just increasing magical protections up 5. Increasing health per level and decreasing their base health. Gold Fury, all forms, increased Gold Fury physical protections per level from 1 to 1.5, decreased Gold Fury health per level from 275 to 250, and decreased Gold Fury physical power from 140 to 120, and increase the physical power per level from 0 to 2. Making things, they're trying to make the jungle more of a challenge, more problematic as time goes on, so you're just not burning through it. Admiral, it's kind of that tough line to walk, because you are trying to, you know, make things harder, but they're also just jungle camps, right? So how hard do you want them to be? This doesn't really move the needle for me. What about you, J-Mac?
Not very much. I think it'll put it to a more sustainable level where this time around, especially because of Assassin's Blessing, it just felt like it was you walk by, you hit the camp, and it's done. Where other games and other titles and whatnot, you still do spend some good time in those jungle camps clearing them. This isn't going to do a whole lot, but it's going to kind of help sustain it just a little bit better. I think of all the changes, the one that you didn't yet hit is the Tower and Phoenixes, a nice little quality of life that's going to hit with it, is there's going to be a visual effect at the base of the tower showing if the backdoor protections are removed. And they also adjusted the way that works too, to where backdoor protections are not removed. Like, so say you're sieging a tower and you're hitting it and hitting it and hitting it. Usually it would be a few seconds and then it would just be like, oh, hey, I'm suddenly not doing my full damage. There's no more minions here, but I was still getting full damage. Now it's until you step out of it, you still have that backdoor protection shred, which is really, really big in sieges, because it means that your tank can run in at the last second and be like, hey, guys, I'm here to take this up for the minions while you guys are still doing damage. Now I'm fully healthy and you guys are still doing full damage to it. I think that's probably the biggest thing that goes alongside sieges coming up.
Yeah, definitely. you know, like we said, it's changing how the game is played, adding a little bit more nuance to the game. That's definitely going to be big. You know, like we said earlier with like backdoor protections on the fire giant, the enhanced fire giant. Mm-hmm. So anytime you can manipulate backdoor protections, it's going to be huge. And so with that, I mean, we might be, like I said, I think we're moving towards that first meta when we come back. I can see the Lokis, the Bastets now. You know, where they're just
say the Lokis as much.
Loki did get nerfed a little bit, but he still kind of does what he wants to do as a split pusher.
So I'll just throw a little fun onto that. If you guys are interested in the numbers behind Loki, I know Alpha Jackal released a video recently. I think he did some collaborating with Flare Boot on this to get the numbers correct. Or he may have just done it himself because he is a numbers guy too. He did release a video on how much damage this is actually going to nerf Loki on. So if you guys are curious on that, look up Alpha Jackal. He did do that, and it's actually kind of significant. You don't think about it, but the damage value dropping at 0.25 at the beginning really does kind of affect his chain some.
Maybe. It's still, if you're getting the backdoor protections, I mean, you're still going to be building the pen, you're still going to be building all of that. It's, yeah, it's a nerf, and yeah, it impacts him, but he's still going to be able to take a tower if he's left alone with some attack speed and some pen. That's just like, that's what he's going to do. Same thing with Bastet. I mean, those are still the things that we could see. And I don't know. I'm not saying it'll be great. I'm just saying, you know, in competitive play, we definitely won't see, you know, the Loki. In competitive play, I think we're definitely going to see Bastet to start the year. We're definitely going to see some running of that. I would be very surprised if we don't. Somebody's going to try to run. Somebody's going to try to manipulate the backdoor protections. And who better to try that with than, you know, some Bastet. So I think that's really all of the big changes as far as the map goes. We've got a couple other changes to talk about, one of which is a new item called the Elixir of Speed. Costs 2,000 gold, and this consumable increases your movement speed by 18% permanently. The effect does not stack with boots, but does stack with literally everything else. And in conjunction with that, Rat can sell his acorn to buy this and get a new item. So he can have 6 slotted actual items instead of acorns. I don't know why you would do it.
I don't know. But I'll be honest on that. I don't know why you would sell the acorn. It's so good. It's more movement speed than the elixir will be. It's 20% versus 18. You get, I believe it's 50 power off of it. And every time your ability lands damage, you get health. You get health regen off of it. Like, I don't know why you would ever sell the acorn, but maybe somebody really wants that extra defense item that they need or something like that. And so the sustain's not relevant, the power's not relevant, and they just want to be able to, you know, take the brunt of somebody's damage for it.
Yeah.
Support Rat.
It'll be interesting to see what that happens. But the idea of this item, I'm kind of on the fence. I both like it, and I also just like it feels a little extra. You know what I mean? Like, this is something that we didn't quite need.
It feels like it's going to be too late. I feel like because you're thinking we're going to a burst meta, which means, in my mind, games are going to go faster. This is an item you're not going to get until late in the game because you're going to have your boots. You're not going to, and to anybody out there, do not skip boots for this early game. You are crippling your power curve so harshly. You're going to do nothing early game if you skip boots to buy this for 2,000 gold instead. But doing the math on it, let's say you're getting 600-700 gold. I don't remember the exact amount you get back for your boots. So let's just say it's like 700 gold you get back for selling your boots. This is 2,000 gold, so you sell your boots, you have 700, means you need 1,300 more just to buy this item. Then you need however much more gold that you're going to get in order to buy your new item for this slot. Plus, you still have to sell your blessing previously. So you have to sell your blessing, get your new item, then you sell your boots to get your last item. That you're looking somewhere, you're going to need like 3,500-ish gold before you can even really purchase this and make it a worthwhile purchase right away. So this is looking like a 35, 40-minute game item to me, unless somebody finds a way to throw it into their build to make their power curve crazy. I don't know.
The only one I could really see that maybe being is like a Merc, right?
But maybe
because you're gonna make up some stuff. But even then, like, I just the idea of it kind of cool, right? It seems weird and awkward. And like we've said, like I feel like we're moving towards a burst meta. So that means you want all of your stuff really quickly and you don't want to sacrifice anything. So where is this going to fit in? I just don't know. I would have rather than this, I would have rather seen rituals come back in any meaningful way. You know, I want like if you're going to design late game items, bring back late game focused stuff. Give me the cool stuff. Give me combat blink. Give me dropship teleport. You know, give me all of that cool stuff that we had for a bit. I miss rituals, and I thought for sure season 6 was gonna be the return of rituals. When I saw Elixir of Speed, I thought that's what they were doing, and then it wasn't, and I was very sad. I really rituals were cool, man. Bring them back. Balance them, of course, but bring them back.
Have to balance.
Change.
You
gotta put. Change relics, rituals. Make them a 3,000 gold upgrade to relics. Give blink a 3,000 gold upgrade to make it a combat blink. Give teleport a 3,000 gold upgrade to be the dropship teleport, where you can teleport to players, right? There's ways to balance this that makes sense and make it, you know, this is a rich man's upgrade, right? So, I don't know. I want ritual spec so much, man. Just give it to me. Let me have some fun again.
Yeah, I could see it, but at the same time, I'm kind of on the boat of good riddance to him. While I would love to have my combat blink like I used to have, so I could run Anubis all the time and have that combat blink ready, run the Giannis jungle so you could have it all the time, I'm kind of glad that the rituals are gone. I think that they were, in my mind, they were cheese over anything else. They were, man, we pushed down this side of the lane with Phoenix is down, but we have a Phoenix down. You know what? Let's just do what all the old Giannis players did, like what Gnaw inspired with the Giannis dropship, the first player to ever, you know, bring in the idea of the dropship to competitive play. Well, now you just get a Ratatosker who can go over the entire enemy base and boom, oh, hey, all five players are here. It's a lot of cheesy stuff, and I'm personally fine that they're gone. Instead of a gold nerf, I would rather have seen an internal cooldown nerf to it. Something more significant, like you can only do this once every 5 minutes or something like that for things like the teleporting to player kind of thing. But I'm on the fence.
By adding it to relics, you automatically balance it, because who's going to buy teleport? Who's going to buy teleport to your solo laner? Maybe your jungle does it and gets blink and teleport. You forego all of your defensive relics for all out offense, right? And you nerf it at the same time. It's like there's this giant benefit, but it's a big risk, right? So realistically, just let your solo laner get to a fight and like get back real quick.
I think the risk
that's
is
really all it amounts to.
I think the risk is too significant for the. Obviously, going off the numbers you provided earlier, it's too big of a risk for not as much of a reward. I would like to see some adjustments to the relics more themselves over anything, or not the relics, the relics overall. I think some minor adjustments here and there could be added to kind of take them away from being
as strong as they are. Damn it.
I'm fine with Scout not being in because we have the actual Ward Chalice. I would like the Ward Chalice to be upgradable so you could do a Century instead. I think that would be a really cool one. So instead of just 400, you can upgrade it for another, you know, 350 or 300 or something like that. And now you can buy a Century, and now you put a Century with it. But that's just little things.
I don't know. I think Scout was just like before its time because warding has only gotten more important since when Scout first came out. So you had to tweak it. Was like, if you look at right now, how many Sentry wards are being bought and placed around mid right now? It's astronomical every game.
Oh, yeah.
If you had the ability to scout that, get gold or stuff like rewards off of that. Oh, I just got a free Sentry ward because I correctly guessed that they had a ward right here. That'd be dope.
I think also if you do include bringing some kind of relic back that has the wards, you take the gold. I think especially if you do the sentry, I think you take the gold bounty off of that one. So killing the ward, I don't think you get that 50 gold. Because imagine you're like, hey, here's a sentry ward. I dropped it. All right, cool. I killed it. Oh man, they dropped one on mine, and it's literally just back to base, get it, back to base, get it, back to base, get it for 50 gold every time. I think you got to take the kill bounty off for something onto that one. Maybe, I don't know, that's just me thinking, but none of that is technically
power. Every ward you kill.
I'm quitting because I'm literally just going to keep going back and forth to base to get free power all the time. But They did make one relic change, which I think was probably the one that needed to be hit more than any of them. Hunters and mages might say thorns maybe need to be hit, but I think the horrific emblem finally got the nerf it needed, because this item is busted. It's a slow, it's an attack speed slow, and at leveled up, it's a damage reduction. It's a flat 20% damage output reduction. Now they're dropping the slowdown by 10%, the attack speed slow by 10%, and the slow is still going to be 10% lower at the upgraded. The attack will be the same, but also the damage debuff is dropping down from 20 to 15. This was probably one of the best items, one of the best relics in the game for teamfights, because, hey guys, I'm Terra, I'm just going to, let's say it's support Terra. You buy this first, and then let's say you bought Blink. Hey guys, I'm Terra. I just blinked in. I hit everybody with Horrific Emblem. Let's start the fight. Well, now the other team can't win because now there's a Terra ult and a Horrific Emblem on them. So they're doing 20% less on top of the Terra ultimate that's making them do less damage. So I think this item was grossly overbloated and finally saw the nerf it has been needing for so many months.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to argue that point with you. I mean, Horrific's been such a huge part of, you know, the current meta and everything. So seeing that kind of get hit with the nerf stick is probably a good thing, because you saw it in just absolutely every game. So anytime you get to that point with anything, it needs to be hit. I think largely the item balance, we kind of saw that. We saw the mage items kind of get hit. We saw some of the, you know, support items kind of get tweaks as well. You know, we saw Stone of Binding kind of see a quality of life change. That just puts the debuff on enemies hit instead of just placing it on your teammates, which I think I kind of like. You know, maybe not, it's maybe not as strong, but I think I like that. And, you know, I don't want to sit here and talk about all the item changes, because I think those are more subject to change. The one thing I will say is they did hit Loneless Mask again, adding another 5% to its negatives, which I don't like. I honestly don't like that. I really liked Lono's. Because the way that I saw the mask is it lets you take a class, take a god from a class and kind of change its class. And I really, really liked that.
I think the damage dealt one was fine to have the 5% nerf to it. I think the healing wasn't as significant, because realistically, when you look at what gods are going to pick up Lono's mask, it's going to be your support and sometimes your solo lane mages. So you're looking at your mages and your assassins. So you're looking at what? Naja, Fenrir, Nox are pretty much, that's the safe to say, those are pretty much the only three gods you're seeing really pick up this Lono's mask on a consistent basis, are those three. Because Naja is going to get protection shred with his ring toss anyways. He's more of a setup for your team, take somebody out of the fight. Nox is all set up for your team, so she doesn't care how much she does. It's all about what the rest of the team does. And Fenrir is the same way. You jump on somebody, you sunder them, you bring them back, and then they die. Pretty much all of those three characters have a single focus in mind, which is keep one person from playing the game of Smite for a short period of time. So the healing factor is not as significant, because you're not building a lot of damage on those characters. When you build Lono's Mask, you're forgoing damage for the most part. It's rare that I've seen a Lono's Mask built on a damage dealer, because who's going to want to reduce their damage by 20% just flat out? Nobody. Nobody is going to want to do that. It's only going to be your supportive minded, your actual true support assassins and mages doing that. And then if you run it on Aphrodite, maybe, but nobody's really running support Aphro, or Baron Somni is the other one, and his heal is already kind of stupid to begin with. And it's a little less about the heal and more the movement speed buff it gets. So the damage dealt, I'm fine with a little bit onto it, even though I still really don't think it matters. I think overall it's just kind of a weird change. Like, why Lono's?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Because it does. I mean, so you look at does Lono's mass affect Neja too?
I believe it's any form of healing. It reduces.
Yeah. So that's Neja too. I think
maybe aside from potions, obviously, but I'm not 100% because I rarely play that style of supports that need the Lonas. It's usually Fenrir, and by like that late into the game, I really don't care about healing. By the time you buy this, potions are irrelevant, and you're healing, and as Naja, you're pretty much just popping for the crit and a little bit of a heal. So I'm not 100% on it.
Right, I don't know. So like I've been really liking unconventional supports lately. So I mean, like one of the supports I've ran for a long time was Raven. So you're taking away the ability for me to get like heals with my three. I've been playing some Op Wash. Also, a big thing about him is the heals that he's going to be getting there with his corpse and things like that. I mean, also the Baron Somdi, you're getting rid of that. Your Afro, your Chang'a, things like that. I don't like getting rid of the healing. I think it'd be fine. I really just want to be able to take Agni and make him a support. I want to be able to take these characters and switch their roles about.
I think if you do anything to Lono's, you reduce the positive on it, because a 20% flat damage reduction is absurd. That's an insane amount.
Yeah, but that's what makes you able to make an assassin into a guardian.
Right. I think if you adjust that down to like 15%, it's still really big, because 15% damage reduction is still pretty massive. I think that's really the only change I would make to it, because it makes those tanky assassins, especially Fenrir, way too tanky. I mean, he could sit there and take up the entire Phoenix duration of it and still walk out with over half of his HP, especially if he has somebody else healing him in the back. Now, if I remember correctly, this is healing done. So I think this is your healing output is reduced, but not your healing input. So I don't think that it affects if you have like a Terra or a Raw healing you in the back. I think it's just your healing as a whole. I think I don't remember if it's your healing as a whole or if it's your healing from you is reduced. Honestly, I really didn't. As much fun as the masks can be, they're very niche. Lona's is only on those few very supports, which is fine. I don't think I've ever seen a competitive Rangda's mask that really worked out, besides maybe once or twice. And then Bumba's mask was just the I want to go really fast around the map build. Usually your Morrigans were building Bumbas and your Poseidons, because it's a lot of fun to build movement speed Poseidon because you go zoom. I think he's also the only god in the game, especially in Omnipotence where it's 80% cooldown. He's like the only guy in the game who can break the movement speed cap because of Bumba's mask. Because you build up full Tide passive and you get two rounds of your two, so you have like 870 movement speed or something. You just fly. It looks like you're speed hacking at that point. It's crazy fun. I really didn't think the mask needed any touching, but the adjustments they made.
If anything, I would say the mask needed to be made better. I really like the ideas behind the mask, and I think they need to be fleshed out more. I think this is, I don't know. I just want more of them. I love it. I love what they represent. I love the idea behind them. And I think we can move on from there. I think the biggest last change we can really talk about is going to be warriors increase base HP by 10 and increase base HP per level of all warriors by 3. And then wait a second. So, I'm reading this. What happened to the movement speed buff?
I don't think there ever was a movement speed.
I thought they increased their movement speed.
No, I don't think so. I think one of the things was that they... No? Because all... No, the reason they didn't do anything movement speed is because there's a basic standard of kind of what each class start has or can go down to, but there's no actual like hard set limit on movement speed for any particular god or class. It's just like general guidelines of it. So... Like, for example, like, mages are, like, 350 to 365 on average or something like that. And assassins are 365 or whatever to 380 on average, let's just say. I'm just a spitballing number. So they don't want to change those stats because then they bloat the entire thing as a whole. And really, warriors don't need a whole lot of movement speed. I think they're up there for one of the second fastest classes. I think all the physicals are much faster than majority of the magicals, with the few exceptions of like Freya, obviously, for the mages. She does move a little bit faster. But I think warriors are like second fastest or right behind the hunters. I know it's assassins are the fastest. And then I think it's hunter warrior or warrior warrior hunter, something like that. So
I don't know. Maybe it was just health. I thought it was a movement. I thought it was like a movement speed by 5 across the board. And I was like, okay, no, what is that going to do? But
no,
health.
No, it's just the health. So 70 health at max level is what you're basically getting off this.
It's not insignificant.
It's not massive, but it takes you away from feeling just kind of like a
super squish.
From feeling like a slightly tankier assassin is basically the way they describe it. Because they already have a higher base protection. So by adding a little bit of extra HP, it's a little bit more valuable than if they were just keep adding more protections on top of them. Actually, I think protection would obviously be more valuable, but so instead of bumping up all of the warrior class's protections, they bumped up their health, which is a lot easier to adjust. And like we said, it's only 70 health going into by the time you hit level 20, and 70 health is not all that much. One other item, I'll just briefly hit it because I think it's a fantastic adjustment to the item, was Book of Thoth got changed to where it only gives you the mana power based off the items that you build, not your actual character's mana pool. I think that's very nice. I think that's the only way you really adjust that item without just destroying its power overall. And they said it comes out to being about the same anyways if you were to do it, because basically what it was is, so let's say you just build Book of Thoth, Book of the Dead, and then late game you have a Soul Reaver. So you have boots, 3 books, pen, and Rod of Tahuti. Your mage is going to have well over, I would say, 2,800 to 3,000 plus mana that gets converted over into power, 5% of that. That's a lot of magical power, especially, you know, that's 100 plus magic power coming your way, depending on how much you have late game. I think by adjusting it to where it's only counting it, counting the items for it, is going to be better. And they did say that evolved, this is going to end up being a 9% conversion, but like I said, it's only for the mana you get from those items alone. So instead of 3,000 of that, you might only get, you know, 1,500 of it, but you're getting 9% versus 5% of it. So you're coming out just barely under or around the same.
I think it's a solid adjustment. Yeah. There's been a few, like we said, all of the mages items that were like essential to win the game, your Book of Thoth, your Soul Reaver, your Obshard, all of those got hit. And I like that. Then you've got Poison Star, Wind Demon get hit. Things like that. So a lot of quality nerfs across the board. But I don't really want to sit down and talk about all the items. I think that a little bit of those. I think there's going to be more changes before we actually see 6.1. And I think we'll have announced 6.2 changes
pretty quickly. Like And there was over 20 gods that got adjustments to their kits in some way, some kind of buffer nerve. So trying to go through all of those would be crazy.
Yeah. So lots of good changes. Season 6 looks like it's going to be very promising. You know, we've got Merlin in the game now, along with King Arthur. I actually haven't been able to play any Merlin. I haven't been able to get into the PTS. We were talking about this before the show. You haven't either. So I'm just going to keep trying and spamming it, trying to get in. I want to play Merlin support. I want it with everything in my bones.
If we can get it up Twitter. And going, we definitely have to 5-man to get somebody to be able to play Merlin who wants it. Because otherwise, you're fighting for your life to play Merlin.
Yeah.
And if your ping is even slightly worse, like, good luck. You're not playing Merlin this game. Then you'll have a rage
follow Twitter. My Twitter to see if I actually do ever manage to get PTS running. And if I do get to play Merlin support, it'll be horrific and I love it. But I think that's about it for our show this week. Anything else you want to talk about or anything you got to say, J-Mac?
Let's just do a real quick rapid fire for we'll do the non-competitive end. For the conquest changes, what is your favorite map-wide change? So this is the boss monsters, the towers, things like that. And what is your favorite specific god or item balance change in 6.1 so far?
Fire Giant being buffed up, I really like. I like the challenge of it, and so I like I like Fire Giant dances. I really like objective dances. So the Fire Giant being a much bigger boss right now is really cool to me. And I think, you know, I would be the memer in me would be disappointed if I didn't say my favorite god change would be Ratatouille can now sell his acorn.
All right, no, I mean that's a good one. For me, you already said Fire Giant. I'll agree on to that one. But outside of Fire Giant, I think the Brute Minion change is probably my next favorite one. So I no longer have to play a guessing game or go, oh my god, guys, we have a Brute Minion. We can actually do this. Now it's, all right, guys, here's the wave. Let's do this kind of thing. It's much more consistency across the map. And unless you're really paying attention and having somebody sit there counting the waves for you, you're not going to be super perfect on knowing those brutes. And now it's going to make that that play around the Gold Fury much more significant than anything else when you get those empowered ones. Right. So that's my favorite map change, is definitely the minions adjustment. My second one for me, which is the god and item, it's going to seem silly, but it's just because he was my first diamond god, and so I got to bring him up. Good old Bacchus getting Chug at level 0, and he doesn't have to put a point into it. I love it.
Bacchus jungle, it's coming. I'm calling it now. Bacchus jungle is going to be a thing. And it's going to be
40%.
Gross.
40% on the meter. Every single
Bacchus
right
has
now.
Early game.
He's disgusting. God help us early. All. It means you could build Belch level 1 now and actually get a stun at level 1. It's gross. God, it's going to be so much fun seeing. I can't wait. So we talked a lot of mess about we kind of talked about like Jeff Hinlan and all that stuff last time. This was his namesake god when he started playing Smite. I can't wait to see Hinlan come back with the Bacchus support.
Yeah, I'm ready for it. Bacchus is going to be gross. I mean, if you know, outside of the meme with Rat, there's a bunch of good changes. I think the most interesting one for me, the one that I'm going to be most interested in following, is this Thoth change where he gets piercing through all of the gods and then roots the first god hit and then slows everybody else and then increased damage on his hieroglyphic assault and the increase the scaling from 100 to 120 on his final judgment. Thoth is coming back in a hard way, big way.
Gross.
You know, I said Fire Giant was going to be a really interesting. Thoth is going to mess up some Fire Giant dancing. Season 6 is going to be a whole new ball game, you know, new meta to learn, new gods, new, you know, interaction with everything. I can't wait to really figure it all out, but that's all the time we have for this week. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for joining J-Mac. And next week, hopefully we can talk about SML. That'd be really cool. If not, it'll probably just be an interview with me and somebody, unless J-Mac and I can sit down and really figure out something to ramble about for an hour and a half. But I'll let you guys know. Just follow us on Twitter at the Zat Dick for me and at underscore JMac Tucker for JMac, of course. And we will see you around the battleground. Goodbye, everybody.